Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the beach access closures in Ogden Dunes, a judge denied a request from Ethel Shelton, a former executive secretary for former Calumet Township trustee Mary Elgin, to appeal her two felony convictions, and Chris Nolte has a conversation with Valparaiso University freshman Stephen Malusnich. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Ogden Dunes Police are advising that all beach access ways are closed due to hazardous conditions resulting from erosion and should not be used. They also ask that no one move or go beyond barriers or caution tape. The closure is necessary for maintenance of public safety. Beach access is also closed at the Portage Lakefront and Riverwalk due to hazardous conditions resulting from erosion. But the pavilion, fishing area, and trails are currently open. Ogden Dunes Police say the closest way to access the beach is currently at West Beach, located just north of US 12 on Porter Lake County Line Road. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. A judge denied a request Tuesday from Ethel Shelton, a former executive secretary, to former Calumet Township trustee Mary Elgin to appeal her two felony convictions because of cost. Shelton, 74, was convicted by a federal jury in April 2018 of conspiracy to commit wire fraud and conspiracy to commit honest services wire fraud. In November, Shelton was sentenced to 1 year of probation, along with a $2,000 fine and $15,000 restitution. The Post Tribune reports, according to a court order, Ethel Shelton recently filed an affidavit stating that she will have spent $5,000 for expenses or attorney fees in connection with her case. She listed her household's monthly income, which all comes from retirement, being more than $1,000 more than her monthly expenses. Because Shelton's household has more than $1,000 in income each month, quote, that is not directed toward any particular expense, among other reasons, the judge ruled that Shelton is financially able to retain counsel. Shelton was named in a multi-count indictment in December 2014, along with Elgin, Elgin's son, Stephen Hunter, and Alex Wheeler, alleging the four committed conspiracy to defraud, wire fraud, conspiracy to commit honest services fraud, honest service wire fraud, and conspiracy to commit extortion. According to court documents, the charges say the four used Calumet Township employees and offices to run political campaigns. Shelton sought a mistrial during her 2018 case, saying that when Stafford Garbutt, a former township employee and informant for the FBI, went into her office to gather documents for the FBI, that was an illegal search. The documents that were taken were used for a search warrant at the Calumet Township office. The mistrial was denied in June, with the judge saying the argument that an FBI informant illegally gained access to documents in the office did not invalidate the charge. According to the sentencing memorandum, the U.S. attorney wrote that Shelton and other employees, quote, did private political campaign work for Elgin while being paid with public funds. Elgin, Shelton, and others also used the facilities and other resources of the trustee's office to plan Elgin's three annual fundraising events and pressured employees to buy tickets to the fundraising events. In 2013 and 2014, Shelton started running her own campaign for a Calumet Township board seat out of the trustee's office using public time and resources, according to the sentencing memorandum. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. A bill up for passage in the Senate this week would require schools beginning in 2021 to have a relationship with a mental health care provider before getting school safety dollars. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brendan Smith reports the measure is one of Governor Eric Holcomb's agenda items.
State Health Commissioner Chris Box says about 75% of schools already have the required connection with a mental health care provider, and the new policy would be flexible in how it defines those relationships, particularly for underserved areas.
These relationships can take many forms, from telehealth to an embedded school-based provider.
Religious conservative groups are wary of linking schools and mental health care services. American Family Association of Indiana head Micah Clark says parents need a voice.
I simply want parents to be involved in this process whenever possible, as much as possible, in order to have the best success.
The bill doesn't affect parental involvement. It simply means schools would be able to point parents towards a mental health care resource. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Legislation changed and approved by a Senate committee Tuesday makes an incremental step to give more time to prosecute child sex crimes. But the original bill went a lot further. Current law says child sex crimes must be prosecuted before the victim turns 31 years old. The new bill slightly extends that. It says if new evidence, DNA, an audio or video recording, or a confession is discovered after the victim turns 31, the crime can be prosecuted within 5 years of that evidence coming out. Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network VP Camille Cooper says that's a good step.
It's important that prosecutors and law enforcement have more time when there is enough evidence.
But the bill originally eliminated the statute of limitations entirely for child sex crimes and rape. That's what Joy Ryder still wants. She is a sexual assault victim who came forward after the statute of limitations expired.
That's what they need. That gives them hope of justice no matter how far it is down the road.
Eliminating the statute of limitations couldn't get support in the committee. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The Gary Community School Corporation is getting an opportunity to respond to the citations brought against it for violation of the City of Gary's unsafe building ordinance. Michael Gonzalez, Communications Director for the City of Gary, explained to Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson what this next step in solving the problem of the unsafe school buildings around the city will look like.
Can you tell me about the latest initiative, where the city is now in terms of selling the vacant schools?
So at the beginning of the year, Mayor Jerome Prince announced that a group of city inspectors went to 9 different schools. Originally, the list was 10. It was shortened to 8, and then one was added. So they went to 9 different former schools to examine them, to inspect them per our city ordinance, which is a sort of an unsafe building. It's an unsafe building ordinance that's modeled after a state law. And they used a number of criteria and discovered that these buildings were unsafe. These are buildings that are former school buildings, places of learning that became layers of criminal activity, where we were finding evidence of all kinds of crime. So using the city ordinance and the state law, Mayor Prince said that this is a public safety issue, and these buildings have to be demolished. They have to be removed. Nobody's using them. And those buildings mostly were owned by the Gary Community School Corporation.
Uh-huh.
So the next step is on February 3rd, there'll be a hearing with a hearing officer, and the Gary Community School Corporation will have an opportunity to respond to the charges and to the citation that they received for these unsafe buildings.
Okay, so the City of Gary issued a citation to the Gary Community School Corporation?
Well, these buildings are a violation of city ordinance, and the neighborhood safety is at stake when you have places where criminal activity is taking place. So they received notice from the City of Gary, and they will be called before a hearing commission and an officer on February 3rd.
And what is the possible results of this hearing? What could the school corporation be on the hook for, some fines or what?
What I think in terms of taking responsibility for those buildings. Now, they'll be required per ordinance and per state law to demolish these hazards.
And so what comes next then after the hearing?
Well, now those details I'll have to get more on, because that will depend on what the committee, because we don't want to jump the gun. They'll have a fair hearing. They'll have an opportunity to explain themselves and to address these charges. But whatever the commission determines after that is what the next step will be.
And so the hearing is February 3rd. When and where?
It's in the evening of February 3rd, and it'll be, at City Hall, but I can find out for sure.
I want to ask you one other thing. There's a state law that says when a school decides to close, that they have to make it available to charter schools to buy the building or lease the property or something for a dollar. Does any of that play into this?
I'm not familiar with that, so I can't comment on that. Our concern is that these public safety hazards be handled properly, and I think in most cases it's going to mean the owner of the building, whoever that owner is, and in this case, most of these are owned by the Great Community School Corporation, will have to make right and make these get rid of these unsafe places. I really think that there are a lot of questions outstanding that we've been asked about this. The law is clear. The law and the city ordinance are clear that if you own an unsafe building, you're going to be held responsible for it. So I think people should take notice, and property owners should take notice and make note of this and handle their properties the right way.
Because some things have really happened in there. What are some of the things that have happened in these school buildings? I know bodies have been found in some of the abandoned buildings and other things, drugs. What are some of the things that have happened?
It's an ugly gamut. And so most recently at Norton School, in I think November, a body was found of a woman who I believe was from Portage, the result of a crime. But the whole point is that it's become too easy for criminal activity to take place around our children, around our families, because these buildings are abandoned, because they haven't been taken care of. And I should add, this ordinance and this state law, these are not new. This is not a tool that's brand new. So folks have known about this for quite some time.
And what are the buildings of note that the city is looking at to tear down? What schools are they?
Well, again, it's not that the city is looking to tear it down. We just think the Gary Community School Corporation needs to be responsible. And if it's ordered to be demolished, then they will be held responsible. But those schools are Norton, Emerson. The state's unsafe building law will affect, in this case, Norton, Emerson, Horace Mann, Lou Wallace, Edison, Ernie Pyle, George Carver, Nobel, Spalding, and Brunswick. Those are the schools that are on the list.
What do you think that the response will be from the Gary School Corporation, and why wouldn't they have wanted to demolish the buildings by now?
Well, I won't speculate on the response, and I think they're the proper person to ask why they haven't taken care of this up until now. Mm-hmm. Our position is that these are public safety hazards that need to be addressed sooner rather than later. This is about our communities. This is about our people.
And these buildings are owned by the school corporation, you said, right?
They're mostly owned by the school corporation. I think there's been some talk that some of these buildings belong to other people, but to our records, these, as far as we know right now, these are owned by the Gary Community School Corporation.
Is there anything else you wanted to add, Mike?
You know, I think it's tragic. It's tragic that we even have to deal with this issue. But Mayor Prince has said that public safety is job one, and he's serious. And this is a result of his commitment to public safety.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with D. Dotson. Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Valparaiso University freshman Stephen Malusnich.
Go.org. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Stephen Malusnich is a current freshman at Valparaiso University. He's also a first-year member of the VU Jazz Ensemble. And he and a lot of other people in the VU campus are very concerned about the state of affairs, so to speak, that in turn may affect the university's jazz program and the people who are on the faculty, in particular, Professor Jeff Brown. Stephen Malusnich is with us to talk more about it and the latest on the petition drive that is out there. Stephen, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'll let you go through the background here. Tell us more about your interest and your concern about the Valparaiso University Jazz Program and the ensemble and all the other programs and the faculty members that are involved in this and why you started the petition drive.
This past November, we were informed by our director, Professor Jeff Brown, that as of May 2020, that his position will no longer be at the university. And he is the driving force behind the jazz program, and he's the one who has started and really taken to the level that they are now, Jazz Fest, and also our monthly performances at Duffy's Bar and Grill in Valpo. And my concern is if Professor Brown's position is eliminated, then there's really no one else who is as capable as he is that would be next in line, so to speak, for that position. And so in November, I started a petition on paper, and I received about 300-400 signatures. And frankly, it was a very busy time of year. We had Thanksgiving break and then Christmas and New Year's. And so when I returned from our Christmas break, I decided to launch an online version of the petition on change.org. And I believe this is the eighth or ninth day that it's been online, and we have close to 2,000 signatures on the online petition alone. And our main goal is basically to preserve Professor Brown in his position as director of the Jazz Ensemble, thereby ensuring the commensurate continuation of the program at Valpo.
This past semester, when you learned all about this, what did they tell you as to the reason why Valparaiso University was making the decision to cancel the jazz program and, in turn, Professor Brown's position?
There have been a lot of recent budget cuts made at the university. The men's tennis and men's soccer teams have also suffered as a result.
Do you think that maybe this here it is just a continuation of having to take a look at the budget, make some decisions on a top level as far as, in this case, the jazz program is concerned?
I believe so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What impressed you, just being a freshman, you get to come in with fresh eyes, so to speak, and no preconceived notions about the Valparaiso University Jazz Program. Number one, what interested you first off in going to Valparaiso University and get involved in the program? And what in turn has impressed you to the point that you wanted to go out there and quite literally probably stick your neck out as a supporter of the program?
I'm from Valpo, and I went to Valparaiso High School, and I was in jazz at the high school for about 4 years there, and we were one of the Valpo's one of the bands that participates in the Jazz Fest every year, so I did have some exposure to the jazz program in that regard. And when I enrolled here at Valparaiso University, one of my one of the first things I wanted to do was enroll in the jazz program, because it seemed like it was a very strong program, and that the kids in it had a lot of fun. And in just my short time here, I have really noticed, I've taken note the level of commitment that Professor Brown has to his students and to his job. He puts in much more time and effort than is necessary, and I think that's the main reason why the VU Jazz Ensemble is as well acclaimed as it is.
Have you had a chance to get, obviously you had last fall before the holiday break came up here and the end of the fall semester going into the spring semester there at VU. What kind of help have you gotten from your fellow students to continue on, as well as what you've done in the change.org website?
There are some bandmates that I have who have been helping me distribute the petition. But so far, I've been the main organizing. I've been trying to find more students to help get the word out, but most of it I've just been doing in my free time, which makes it a lot easier to distribute now because it is now online. Mm-hmm. There was an article that came out in the VU paper on Friday, and since then I have gotten a lot of people who have been reaching out to help you as one of them, and then I also had an interview with the Post Tribune and the Times. Mm-hmm.
And what kind of reaction have you gotten from the folks on the faculty, as other faculty members, and in particular the administration?
There hasn't been a lot of communication from the administration. My current plan is to, my goal is 10,000 signatures on the change.org website. And once I have that number, I'm going to attach the letter that I prepared to the administration with the signatures and submit them. But so far, the overall response has been fairly positive. Change.org is that you can leave reasons for why you signed, and all of there, I haven't read all of them yet, but there are hundreds and hundreds of comments that mention what an impact that Professor Brown has had in their not only collegiate life, but also professionally thereafter.
Well, it sounds like, obviously, if you're looking to a goal of May of this year, when they're supposed to make the official decision about the Jazz program and about Professor Brown's position, you've got a few months left, but you don't have a lot of time left. So you're hoping that more of the signatures come in, so you have that 10,000 that you're hit for the goal, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. If there's anything that you haven't already mentioned to us today here on the program, or anything in particular you would like to say to get the word out as well about the your feelings, the importance of having a Jazz program of the caliber and the popularity is at Valparaiso University, what might that be?
Petition is online. It's on change.org, as I've mentioned. The petition is called Save VU Jazz. If you search on change.org, it comes right up. Mm-hmm. And there has been a recently, as a matter of fact, the director of the music program an entire music program, Dr. Moggins, has said that jazz will continue. However, I feel that if it continues without Professor Brown, that it won't be to the caliber that it has been during his tenure there because of his expertise and his commitment to the program. I am trying to... yesterday, actually, I was thinking about it, and I figured out a way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I am trying to save the university jazz program, but more so I'm trying to save Professor Brown's program because he has been a driving force in the program's continued success.
Okay. Now, I have to ask you, have you gotten any word back from Professor Brown? He's a pretty modest fellow, so I'm not sure he would say a lot, but I'm sure he probably has some feelings, certainly, besides personal feelings, about what the petition drive's all about.
Professionally, he is not really able to speak in support of or to condone the petition. But he has asked to remain separate from that, and so because that would be a conflict of interest, and so this has I haven't talked with him a whole lot about that.
Well, Stephen, thank you for spending time with us to talk about the petition drive that you have out there on change.org to save VU Jazz. And I'm glad to hear that you have as many supporters and names and already listed on the petition. And we hope that you'll get back in touch with us, let us know how the petition drive is coming along. And the better that we have some good news to report that Valparaiso University is able to find a way to keep the jazz program, including the jazz festival that's always underway, and with Professor Jeff Brown's position. Thanks very much for spending time to talk with us today.
Thank you very much for the exposure.
You're welcome. Stephen Mnucic is a freshman. He's also a first-year member of the jazz ensemble at Valparaiso University. And he, as we've mentioned, is the creator of the petition that's out there on change.org for everybody who supports the VU jazz program to help keep the program going in the years ahead. There's a measure that is now in the General Assembly that would deal with some of the issues here in Northwest Indiana involving Lake Michigan access. And we have
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.